Hello, listeners. This is Carolyn Yeager, bringing you the ninth installment of my reading of the Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau, 1939 to 1945, a book written by Alfred de Zayas from the surviving files of this bureau. I will be reading Chapter 16 in this installment, titled Captured Germans in the Soviet Union, which is 18 pages. This chapter deals with the treatment of German troops after capture and the overwhelming evidence that they were mainly shot, especially in the first 2 years of the war. The author engages in a certain amount of equalization of wrongdoing in order to placate the political establishment who controls publishing along with everything else. Keeping that in mind, the chapter begins. Germany's surprise attack on the Soviet Union on 22 June 1941 opened a new and far more brutal phase of the war. Hitler had already given the so-called Commissar Order, intended to deny prisoner of war status to commissars and, in parentheses, special political officers integrated into the Soviet armed forces. And he had set the tone for the treatment of Russian soldiers by stating categorically to his generals that, quote, the Russian soldier is no comrade, unquote. He knew, of course, that the Soviet Union had not signed the Geneva Prisoner of War Convention of 1929, but more importantly, he saw his eastern neighbors as subhumans and Stalin as a ruthless and determined adversary. Certainly, both sides anticipated a more barbarous struggle than that being waged in the West. Atrocity reports were not long in coming. The Soviet Union accused the German Air Force of attacking Russian hospitals. The War Crimes Bureau received a flood of reports dating from 22nd June on, describing the killing of German prisoners of war. Scouting patrols were especially hard hit, and many mutilated corpses were found by the troops that followed close behind. A number of mass shootings were reported in areas where the Russian troops had been flanked on both sides and had to retreat very fast in one direction so that they chose not to take any prisoners and to shoot any that they already had. I want to comment on this just that in the second paragraph saying that the Soviet Union accused the German Air Force of attacking Russian hospitals. Now, they may have accused them of that, but that doesn't mean that it was so and that that's what they were doing. I don't believe for a minute that they would have purposely attacked Russian hospitals, not that may have been damaged by the German Air Force. And the other thing I want to say is that the reports of Soviet violations of the conventions of war dated from June 22nd, meaning the very first day these reports began coming in. Okay, the first section is headed The Massacre at Bronniki. On the road from Kliwan to Bronniki in the Ukraine on 1st July 1941, some 180 German soldiers of the 2nd Infantry Regiment 35 motorized, 6th Infantry Regiment 119 motorized, and 5th Artillery Regiment 60, mostly wounded men, were taken prisoner by the Russians. According to the report of Judge Wilhelm Heinrich of the 25th Infantry Division, dated 2nd July 1941, the bodies of 153 of them were found. Beyond interrogating witnesses, Heinrich went to the field where the massacre had taken place and directed the investigations himself. Lieutenant Franz Kroening identified the bodies and in the course of a second search discovered 12 more corpses some 200 yards away from where the others had been found. But not all German soldiers who had been taken prisoner were killed. Some had succeeded in fleeing to the woods when the massacre started. Judge Heinrich took the depositions of 6 survivors. 6. One of them, Private Michael Beer, barely 4 hours after the shooting on 1st July, said, quote, together with some 150 to 200 comrades who were not wounded or very lightly wounded, I was taken to a clover field some 20 yards left of the road. Suddenly, the Russians started shooting at us. After the first shots, we dispersed. In spite of the continuous fire from machine guns and automatic rifles, I was able to escape down the ditch to the left of the road. Unquote. Private Beer was also called upon to identify some of his dead comrades on 2nd July. Quote, since there was practically no one who knew them all, we then buried them outside the church in Bronicki. Unquote. Another survivor, Corporal Carl Jaeger, testified before Judge Heinrich on 12th July, 1941. After being taken prisoner, other comrades and I were forced to undress. We had to surrender all valuable objects, including everything we had in our pockets. I saw other comrades stabbed with a bayonet because they were not fast enough. Corporal Kurtz had a wounded hand and could not remove his belt as quickly as desired. He was stabbed from behind at the neck so that the bayonet came out through the throat. A soldier who was severely wounded gave slight signs of life with his hands. He was kicked about and his head was battered with rifle butts. Together with a group of 12 to 15 men, I was taken to a spot north of the road. Several of them were completely naked. We were about the third group counting from the road. Behind us, the Russians commenced the executions. Panic broke out after the first shots, and I was able to flee. That's the end of Carl Jaeger's statement. And these statements are taken under oath. Survivor Wilhelm Metzger, interrogated several months later by Judge Siebert, corroborated the description. Quote, the Russians grabbed everything we had, rings, watches, money bag, uniform insignia, and then they took our coats, shirts, shoes, and socks. They started liquidating the various groups with machine gun fire and hand grenades. I cannot describe what happened in detail since I took advantage of the confusion to run away. Unquote. One victim who could not flee was Private Hermann Heiss, who lay severely wounded in the field. He was almost dead when German soldiers found him on 2nd July 1941 and took him to a field hospital. It was not until 26th November 1941 that a member of the War Crimes Bureau, Judge Lothar Schirne, could take his statement at a hospital in Bielitz-Heilstätten near Berlin. He said, quote, my hands were tied up at my back, and we were forced to lie down. A Russian soldier stabbed me in the chest with his bayonet. Thereupon, I turned over. I was then stabbed 7 times in the back, and I did not move anymore. The Russians evidently assumed that I was dead. I heard my comrades cry out in pain. Then I passed out. The following morning, I was found by German soldiers. I saw that the head of my comrade was split open. Most of the others were dead or died later as a result of their wounds. Unquote. In all, 12 survivors and witnesses of the Bronicki massacre testified under oath before 4 different military judges, enabling the Bureau to obtain an almost complete picture of what had happened. Similar reports coming in from other divisions gave rise to the suspicion that the Russians were not taking any prisoners, and the Bureau set itself the task of determining whether this practice responded to an order from the higher echelons of the Soviet Army. The next section is headed Sources of Information. For the entire duration of the Russian campaign, reports of torture and execution of German prisoners did not cease. The War Crimes Bureau had 5 major sources of information. 1. Captured enemy papers, especially orders, reports of operations, and propaganda leaflets. 2. Intercepted radio and wireless messages. 3. Testimony of Soviet prisoners of war. 4. Testimony of the corpses or mutilated bodies of executed prisoners of war. From 1941 to 1945, the Bureau compiled several thousand depositions, reports, and captured papers, which, if nothing else, indicate that the killing of German prisoners of war upon capture or shortly after their interrogation was not an isolated occurrence. Documents relating to the war in France, Italy, and North Africa contained some reports on the deliberate killing of German prisoners of war, but there can be no comparison with the events on the Eastern Front. On the other hand, it must be emphasized that the Russians did take prisoners. According to official reports, 175,000 Germans in 1941-42, 220,000 in 1943, 560,000 in 1944, and 2,200,000 in 1945. These figures refer to Germans who were not immediately killed upon capture, but sent on to POW camps. Even so, their chances of survival were slim, as were those of Soviet prisoners of war in German camps. Thus, one cannot speak of a uniform Soviet practice with respect to the German prisoners of war. Some were luckier than others. It is with these reservations that one should approach the following selection from the documents of the War Crimes Bureau. Among captured Soviet documents was a report of Operations No. 11 of the staff of the Soviet 26th Division, 1 kilometer west of Slaziana, dated 13 July 1941, 10 a.m. Quote, "The enemy left approximately 400 dead on the battlefield. Some 80 Germans had surrendered and were executed," unquote. A captured report of the commander of the Soviet company, Captain Gediu, dated 30th August 1941, 3 mine throwers, 1 officer killed, 3 PT guns, 4 machine guns, 15 wounded men shot, unquote. In the notes of a Soviet medical officer, B.J., who was taken prisoner, he said, quote, "All prisoners of war who had belonged to the German army were executed during the operations near Odessa. In the course of the fierce resistance of the Red Army, from 4 to 6 November 1941, a small group of Germans was taken prisoner. They were all shot. Near Sevastopol, no prisoners were taken. More precisely, prisoners were executed," unquote. The diary entry of a fallen officer of the 61st Cavalry Regiment for 24th December 1941 said, quote, "The 2nd Squadron took 3 Fritzes, probably incendiaries. 2 of them were killed without interrogation. 1 was sent under guard of 2 men to the division staff. His fate was, however, the same," unquote. You probably realize that they use the word Fritzes for Germans. From the diary of an engineer named Andreev, who fell near Sevastopol in June 1942, quote, "In a village near Biasala, the German prisoners were shot. A young fellow was in charge of the executions, and he went about asking who should do the shootings. An older soldier asked for a machine gun, shouted, 'For my family, for my son, for my mother,' and mowed all of them down," unquote. In a battle report of the 109th Armored Brigade, dated 2nd July 1942, quote, "From the crews of 2 German tanks, we took 2 prisoners. We liquidated the other Hitlerites," unquote. Excerpts from reports of the partisan group Polk 13, which were seized by the Germans in October 1943. They read, quote, "Losses among enemy prisoners, 13 policemen and 2 Germans who were burned in a stable, 5th August 1943. During our raid on the police at Rosny, we killed 6 Germans and took 1 prisoner, who was shot after interrogation," unquote. 7th August 1943. On 7th October, a German supply column was ambushed. A cavalryman who accompanied the supply column was captured and later shot. 8 October 1943. From the Bureau's extensive documentation on intercepted Soviet radio and wireless messages, the following illustrations are representative. On 6 September 1942, quote, "The 3 men will now be shot. I still need the Fritz F. He should now show me the ditch and the positions. That means we have to wait with this one," unquote. On 7 July 1943, quote, "The enemy suffered great losses. We captured 13 enemy machine guns and turned them on the enemy. We did not take any prisoners. They were all liquidated," unquote. On 17 March 1944, quote, "Do you have any prisoners there? Yes, 2 men. I shall interrogate them. I forbid you to shoot them because I want to see them first. The rest we can take care of here just as well," unquote. We took prisoners belonging to the 4th Mountain Infantry Division, Regiment 13, Company 9. You know what we did with them. They will never come to you. Unquote. Quote, yesterday you sent me 12 men. The guards had to go back, so I had the prisoners shot. Unquote. The next section is headed Soviet Justification for the Killings. Captured Soviet documents and the testimony of many witnesses provide a wide spectrum of explanations for the frequent liquidation of German prisoners of war. These are numbered. There's quite a number of them. 1. German soldiers who did not surrender. Quote, a sharp distinction is made between soldiers who surrender and those who fall in Soviet hands after battle. The former are treated well. The latter may be immediately shot without an order. Unquote. Quote, Lieutenant Karpenko officially ordered that every German soldier taken prisoner while still carrying a weapon should be immediately shot. Only such German soldiers will be sent to the rear who voluntarily desert to our side. Unquote. 2. Wounded soldiers. Quote, a gravely wounded soldier was captured, but on the way the older Sergeant Kabulo killed him with his bayonet because he was seriously wounded. Unquote. Quote, why should we bother to carry him? His hands and feet are frozen. Unquote. 3. Neither means nor time to transport the prisoners. Quote, 20 kilometers west of Storozynik in the Bukovina, some 300 to 400 Romanian prisoners of war, including a number of German officers and non-commissioned officers, were shot on orders of the regiment commander, Major Suelin, primarily because we had no way of transporting them, and he did not want to be burdened with them. Unquote. Quote, as soon as the enemy opens fire, shock troops must immediately withdraw and take the prisoners along. If it is not possible to take the prisoners, they must be liquidated. Unquote. Quote, I had the German prisoners of war shot because I did not have the time to interrogate them. Unquote. 4. Prisoners who refused to give military information. Quote, we did not succeed in making the third soldier talk. We had to shoot him. Unquote. Quote, those soldiers who talked were sent to the rear. Those who didn't were shot near the place where they were captured. Unquote. 5. Insufficient food. Quote, when I spoke to Gribau about it, he admitted the killing and commented, do you want us to feed the prisoners with bread while the Germans kill our prisoners? The same day and place, 2 more German prisoners of war were shot under orders of the same Politruk. I guess that's a political officer. 6. Nazis and officers. Quote, party members were executed, whether officers or soldiers. Unquote. Quote, while I was in the Soviet Army, I heard from the commissars that we should not capture fascists, but liquidate them on the spot. Unquote. Quote, the commissar mentioned that every German officer was shot after interrogation, unquote. Quote, in the 29th Armored Division, we had an order from the Army High Command that senior German officers captured at the front should be sent back for interrogation, while junior officers should be shot because they are supposed to be more loyal to Hitler, unquote. 7. Rewards for high casualty figures. Quote, we have a division order according to which every Red Army soldier who shoots 20 German soldiers gets a 3-day vacation at home. The order of the day is, kill more German soldiers. That is a basis for our victory. Unquote. Quote, Red Army soldiers must enter a written commitment to kill several Germans in battle. The commissars keep records in small books. Those who can claim many killings are raised in rank or decorated. Unquote. Clearly, the German aggression against the Soviet Union was met with vehement cruelty. Captured Soviet documents and intercepted radio messages largely confirm and strengthen the testimony of German and Soviet witnesses. The foregoing statements, only a few of the thousands compiled by the War Crimes Bureau, justify the conclusion that they cannot all be dismissed as exaggeration, nor can they be simply explained as reprisals for German atrocities. And then Desaias puts in parentheses, Although the latter undoubtedly account for many instances, I don't think so. And finishes, similar incidents occurred throughout the entire Eastern Theater of War and commenced immediately upon the outbreak of hostilities. The next section is headed Soviet War Propaganda versus Official Guidelines. In order to understand the atmosphere in which such treatment of German prisoners of war was possible, it is necessary to keep in mind the crimes committed by the... Here we go. It is necessary to keep in mind the crimes committed by the SS Einsatzgruppen, in parentheses, task force, and the great hardships imposed on the Soviet population by the German occupation. Well, truthfully, I have to say that many Soviet citizens were happy to see the Germans, and the Germans had many good relationships going on and were working well with the Soviet population. And there are many accounts of that and instances of that. But he ignores that in this book. Desaias does. So continuing after that side comment by myself. In addition, Soviet war propaganda was designed to instill fanaticism in the Red Army troops and incite them to annihilate the German enemy without mercy. A leaflet that circulated in areas already occupied by the Germans admonished the Soviet civilian population to, quote, obtain weapons and rise against the Germans, destroy them to the very last man, wreak vengeance upon the German fascist scoundrels, take revenge for the raping of your wives, avenge the torture committed on the people, avenge the destruction of your cities and villages, take revenge for everything, blood for blood, death for death, unquote. Of course, the raping of your wives was a propaganda that the Soviets put out, hoping that some of the soldiers would think that other wives were being raped, or maybe their wives were being raped when they left at home. Another, intended for the Soviet population of the Leningrad and Tallinn districts, was found on 25th March 1942. It said, quote, "The officers and soldiers in the green coats are not human, but wild animals. Destroy German officers and soldiers as you kill mad dogs," unquote. Many Soviet authors turned from literary production to violent propaganda. Among these, Ilya Ehrenberg was one of the most prolific. He wrote for the front newspaper Red Star and produced many political leaflets. In one of these, captured in large numbers on 9th September 1942 by the 4th German Armored Army, the last paragraph reads as follows, quote, "The Germans are not human beings. Henceforth, the word German means to us the most terrible curse. From now on, the word German will trigger your rifle. We shall not speak anymore. We shall not get excited. We shall kill. If you have not killed at least one German a day, you have wasted that day. If you cannot kill your German with a bullet, kill him with your bayonet. If there is calm on your part of the front, or if you are waiting for the fighting, kill a German before combat. If you leave a German alive, the German will hang a Russian and rape a Russian woman. If you kill one German, kill another. There is nothing more amusing for us than a heap of German corpses. Do not count days. Do not count miles. Count only the number of Germans you have killed. Kill the German. This is your old mother's prayer. Kill the German. This is what your children beseech you to do. Kill the German. This is the cry of your Russian earth. Do not waver. Do not let up. Kill." Unquote. In sharp contrast to Ehrenberg's propaganda, the resolution of the Commissars of the USSR of 1st July 1941, a copy of which was captured by the German army in August of 1941, prohibits A, insulting or maltreating prisoners of war, B, employing force or threats to obtain information, and C, robbing prisoners of parts of their uniforms, clothing, shoes, personal items, documents, or medals and decorations. Special regulations pertaining to this decree were to be explained to the prisoners of war in a language they could understand. All rules and orders applying to them were to be posted on bulletin boards where prisoners could read them. End of that resolution. This document was introduced at Nuremberg by the Soviet prosecution to show that it subscribed to the Hague regulations on land warfare. You see, that's about the nature of all their documents. As illustrated above, however, Soviet military records, intercepted radio messages, and the testimony of countless Soviet prisoners of war indicate that Soviet commissars and soldiers largely ignored this resolution. Moreover, certain captured documents show that higher Soviet authorities knew the resolution was not being followed. One finds, for instance, many orders prohibiting the practice of killing prisoners before they could be sent to the rear for interrogation. In September of 1941, two such documents were taken in the area occupied by the German Second Army. The first is a communication of the Central Office for Political Propaganda of the Soviet Fifth Army, dated 30 June 1941, addressed to commanders and chiefs of political propaganda, and signed by Major General M.I. Potapov, Commander-in-Chief of the Fifth Army. It said, quote, "It has frequently occurred that Red Army soldiers and commanders, embittered by the cruelties of the fascist thieves, do not take any German soldiers and officers prisoner, but shoot them on the spot. As a consequence of this practice, it is difficult for the leadership to determine enemy formations, the political and moral state of the German army. At the same time, this practice is bad from the political point of view, since our task consists in inducing the German soldier to desert to the Red Army. If they find out that prisoners are shot, the influx of deserters stops. I therefore order, 1. It must be made plausible to all fighters and commanders that killing captured soldiers and officers is detrimental to our interests. Prisoners must be sent to the rear without delay so that they may be processed. 2. I categorically forbid shootings on individual initiative." The second document, dated 14 July 1941, originates from the Soviet 31st Corps and is directed to all chiefs of counterintelligence and all deputy commanders responsible for political matters. It bears the signature of the chief of the propaganda department of the 31st Corps, Commissar Ivanchenko. It says, quote, "At this time of struggle, one recognizes in the party political work politically damaging and even criminal deficiencies. Red Army soldiers and commanders do not capture enemy soldiers and officers. Prisoners have been strangled or stabbed to death. Such behavior toward prisoners of war is politically damaging to the Red Army. It embitters the soldiers of the fascist army. It hinders the process of disintegration. It gives the officers of the fascist army evidence with which they can lie to their soldiers about the horror of imprisonment by the Red Army and thus strengthen their will to fight. Every means of political persuasion must be used to explain to all units that such behavior toward the prisoners of war is unworthy of the Red Army and very damaging. To make clear that the German soldier, a worker and farmer, does not fight voluntarily, that the German soldier, when he is captured, ceases to be an enemy. To take every measure necessary to capture soldiers and especially officers." Unquote. Similar orders were issued on 28 December 1941 by the commander of the 168th Cavalry Regiment, Colonel Pankratow. Quote, "There have been a number of cases lately in which officers have failed to deliver to the regiment staff German fascist prisoners of war who have been liquidated on the spot, so that we have lost the opportunity of learning about the conditions of the enemy. I order, all prisoners of war shall be delivered to the regiment staff under the personal responsibility of the chiefs of departments and of the political officers." Unquote. Significantly, most orders prohibiting the execution of prisoners of war prior to interrogation say nothing about what to do with the prisoners after interrogation. One decree, however, having specified that, quote, "captured enemy soldiers and officers must be sent to the higher staffs for interrogation," unquote, went on to say, quote, "the fighting men and officers must know that the enemy will not be spared anywhere," But for the sake of the war effort, we need prisoners of war, and therefore we must take them. We will have plenty of time to deal with them. None of the intruders will leave our country alive." Unquote. As the war continued, there were other good reasons not to kill prisoners besides the hope of extracting military information. As one Soviet prisoner stated in December 1942, quote, "Our officers forbade our killing of German prisoners of war, as was frequently done last winter. We urgently need their labor," unquote. Apparently, about this time, the leadership of the Soviet Army decided to clamp down on unauthorized lynchings. On 8th March 1943, a captured Soviet lieutenant stated, "Lieutenant General Belov, Commander-in-Chief of the 61st Army, following an order of Army General Zhukov, ordered that German prisoners of war should no longer be shot." Unquote. A number of captured documents indicate that an effort was made at various levels of the Soviet Army to stop the widespread killing of prisoners by threatening disciplinary action against the responsible officers. On 27 March 1942, all commanders and commissars of the 17th Division were informed of a decision of the Army War Council following an incident in which, quote, "In spite of the fact that the military situation did not hinder the delivery of the soldier to the regiment staff for interrogation, platoon commander Kudryazev took this soldier some 300 to 400 meters away from the place where he had been captured and shot him. By this act, he violated the order of the People's Commissars for Defense of the USSR and of the Army War Council. The Army War Council has instituted a court-martial proceedings against platoon commander Lieutenant Kudryazev and emphasizes that similar cases will be prosecuted in the future. This order shall be communicated to all platoon commanders." Unquote. The files of the German War Crimes Bureau cannot, of course, provide a full picture of the practice of Soviet courts martial, but it appears that such efforts did not have much success. Bureau documents indicate that the killing of captured Germans continued unabated through the years 1943 to 1945. However, much Soviet policy on the highest level may have disapproved. The next section is headed Responsibility for the Killings. While it is not easy to establish the degree of knowledge and of responsibility of the higher echelons of the Soviet Army, it was the testimony of countless Soviet prisoners of war that most of the shootings of German POWs were ordered by commissars and lower rank officers. On 27 November 1941, several Soviet prisoners declared, "The Politruk of the 9th Company ordered that all Germans were to be killed and no prisoners taken." He repeated this order in front of the assembled company, unquote. On 19th January 1942, Lieutenant Vasily Kisilov wrote a statement in his native Ukrainian. Quote, "The regiment's commissar ordered that no prisoners be made. All Germans must be killed. None may stay alive." Unquote. On 23rd August 1942, a sergeant, A.K., accused the commissar of killing German prisoners of war after interrogating them. He, quote, "ordered some 150 Russian soldiers present to fall in and then delivered a speech. In his speech, he said, 'You must remember that you will be executed if you fall into German hands. The Germans are men of the lowest class. They fight against Stalin.' At this point, the commissar drew his pistol and shot the German corporal and the older soldier." Unquote. Funny that saying, "you are of the lowest class because you fight against Stalin," who was, of course, the great hero. On 17 July 1942, when Sergeant P.S. similarly accused his commissar, Nikolai Nedostupov, also a prisoner of war, Nedostupov was confronted with the allegations. He admitted that he gave the order to take no prisoners when they were attacking and that he condoned the maltreatment of German wounded and prisoners. Quote, "I know that I went beyond the order of our army leadership, which only requires us to kill prisoners if we cannot transport them." Unquote. On 9th December 1942, another prisoner, Lieutenant A.O., stated that, quote, Germans who were captured while no officers were around were immediately shot. Officers, however, took care that they were sent to the rear. Most commissars order in all cases that they be shot, unquote. Lieutenant M.S. reported the shooting of 46 German prisoners of war, including 4 officers, without prior interrogation. Quote, the regiment commander of the 123rd Infantry Regiment of the 22nd Infantry Division, Major Ivan Alexandrovich Kulikov, and the regiment's commissar, August Michalski, both gave the execution order. Other Russian officers in the area who expressed their indignation were depicted as traitors by Otmichalski and threatened with being shot themselves, unquote. The statement of another Soviet officer, Major K, appears to reinforce the case against the commissars. Quote, the regiment commanders must deliver prisoners of war to the division to the corps to the OGPU. But in practice, when prisoners are on the way to the battalion or to the regiment, most commissars order that they be shot. Politically ambiguous company leaders also have them shot on their own initiative. The OGPU interrogates the prisoners about their political views. Those who are sympathetic to communism are treated well. Whoever expresses fascist or capitalist ideas is immediately shot. An order to kill German prisoners of war has never been given by higher military authority, but no officer is in a position to prohibit a commissar from giving such instructions, unquote. All these and other statements seem to establish the responsibility of the commissars. But many Soviet officers on various levels similarly ordered or at least condoned the killings. For example, Captain W.P. testified on 21st October 1941 that, quote, every Russian officer on the front knew that parachutists were liquidated by a special unit of the NKVD, unquote. And a Soviet colonel on 21st February 1942 related that, quote, 5 soldiers of the NKVD carried out the execution of a German pilot in the presence of the commander-in-chief of the Third Army. The general was the senior officer among those who were there at the time, unquote. The next section is headed the alleged Stalin order. Stalin order is in quotes. The question arises whether Soviet commissars were acting exclusively on their own initiative or with Stalin's tacit or express approval. Witness testimony collected by the War Crimes Bureau indicates that commissars frequently quoted Stalin to justify the killings, although this does not necessarily mean that Stalin, in fact, knew how he was being quoted. On 22nd December 1941, a Soviet prisoner of war stated, quote, sometime between 4 and 8 December 1941, our platoon commander read us an order from Stalin, according to which all German prisoners of war and all captured German wounded should be shot immediately, unquote. A Soviet propaganda leaflet found by the German 16th Army in December 1941 ends with a quotation from Stalin printed in big letters, quote, the Germans must be killed to the last man. They have fallen into our homeland as occupiers. No mercy to the German occupiers. Death to the German occupiers, unquote. Alfred Frauenfeld, representative of the Foreign Office, VAA, of the High Command of the 16th Army, sent these in various intelligence reports to Berlin on 11 January 1942, confirming the general impression that German prisoners of war were being liquidated on Stalin's orders. On 18 January 1942, 4 Soviet prisoners of war gave a sworn statement to the interrogating German judge. Quote, from 16 November 1941, our Politruk repeated every day a roll call that Stalin had ordered in his radio speech of 6 November 1941. That all Germans found on Russian soil, regardless whether they were Volksdeutsche or captured German soldiers, were to be liquidated to the last man. we were instructed to act accordingly. Unquote. Another Soviet prisoner asserted on 25 January 1942 that, quote, every Russian soldier received a mimeographed Stalin order in which harshest treatment of the Germans was specifically demanded. According to this order, every German soldier was to be liquidated, unquote. On 26 November 1942, Sergeant P, a captured member of a Soviet penal unit, also maintained that, quote, the guiding principle was Stalin's word from November 1941, quote, extermination of the Hitler generation, unquote. Contrary to the impression given by the foregoing statements, other witnesses testified that the process was more selective. On 16 April 1942, Commissar A.L. declared under oath, quote, the standard for dealing with German prisoners of war in the Red Army is Stalin's order of November 1941, according to which all prisoners of war who fight to the end and are captured with the weapons in their hands are to be shot. Only deserters are sent to the rear as prisoners, unquote. On 12 January 1943, the Intelligence Department of the Center Army Group reported, Soviet deserters have stated that there is a Stalin order according to which every German soldier who is captured while fighting is to be shot. Only deserters are excluded from this rule. German soldiers with decorations are seen as great criminals since they could only have received their decorations by killing very many Russians, unquote. And on 2 January 1943, the Soviet prisoner of war, Captain K.K., interrogated by Judge Schlitt, cited, quote, a Stalin order, I believe from January or February 1942, according to which prisoners who put up resistance upon capture are to be shot. I do not know of any other Stalin order, unquote. A German intelligence report of 10 August 1943, however, stated that under, quote, a new secret order of Stalin, unquote, prisoners, quote, waste too much time when they turn up individually. Only groups of more than 10 prisoners should be sent to the interrogating organs. This instruction should be given from man to man and not to the assembled troop, unquote. Despite all this testimony, the Bureau's files contain still other depositions of Soviet prisoners of war who had never heard of any such Stalin order and who attributed the killings to independent action by the commissars. Quote, officers and commissars accuse each other of giving such orders, unquote. According to the results of intensive questioning of numerous Soviet prisoners of war at Krasminiak in July 1941, this is the result of the questioning, what the Germans wrote down. No general order has been given to kill all German officers, non-commissioned officers, and men upon capture. The shooting and torturing to death of German soldiers are explained by captured Soviet soldiers, commissars, officers, and doctors as stemming from individual or special orders given to the troops by commissars or officers or both. A junior commissar stated that such orders are given primarily by battalion and regimental commanders to whom the commissars are accountable. Officers and two doctors allege that the orders discussed are given exclusively by the political commissar. These contradictions cannot be resolved, although the junior commissar was threatened with execution should it be established that he lied. In support of his allegation, he referred to secret orders given to the commanders, which he, as junior commissar, was not allowed to see. End of report. Even on 19th December 1941, after the alleged Stalin order of November 1941, the Intelligence Department of the 54th Army Corps communicated to Berlin the testimony of a Soviet lieutenant that, quote, German prisoners are liquidated by commissars and members of the NKVD. He does not know of any order not to take any more prisoners, unquote. Then on 20th May 1942, the Intelligence Department of Prisoner of War Camp No. 240 transmitted to the Bureau the testimony of a Soviet captain who claimed that, quote, according to a Stalin order of February 1942, no more prisoners should be killed and they ought to be treated well, unquote. And on 13 December 1942, a Soviet sergeant testified, quote, there is indeed an order of Stalin according to which prisoners of war may not be shot, but this order is secret and has not been circulated. There are certain exceptions, for instance, that flyers should all be killed, as well as those who resist. By resistance is meant resistance during actual battle, and not resistance after imprisonment. National Socialists are also liquidated, unquote. On 7 April 1943, the Intelligence Department of the 57th Infantry Division reported a Soviet deserter's statement that in mid-May of 1942, quote, a new Stalin order was read according to which the killing of prisoners of war was strictly forbidden. The main reason for this measure was lack of labor. At present, rewards are being given for bringing in prisoners, unquote. Many Soviet prisoners of war, of course, were never asked whether they knew of any general order with regard to the treatment of captured Germans. The bulk of the Soviet depositions simply describe the killings of German POWs, and in those cases in which responsibility was clearly established, it appears that the orders came from Soviet officers or commissars. The documents contained in the War Crime Bureau's files do not definitively answer the question of whether these Soviet officers were acting on their own account or pursuant to a general order from Stalin. Perhaps the following explanation given by a Soviet prisoner of war comes closest to the truth. On 22 December 1941, the Intelligence Department of the 54th Army Corps reported that a Russian lieutenant, quote, knows of a Stalin order issued about 2 months ago, according to which all occupiers are to be destroyed. This order has been interpreted in various ways. He himself understands it to mean that as many Germans as possible must be killed in battle, but that the order has no application to prisoners, whether wounded or not. There are, however, other soldiers of the opinion that precisely on the basis of this order, it is imperative to liquidate the wounded since these cannot work and have no utility whatever, unquote. If there were an absolutely authentic text of Stalin's speeches of 6th and 7th November 1941, there might be a clear answer to the question of whether Stalin did in fact issue a special order to liquidate German prisoners of war. The official Soviet text available today may not be complete, and of course, such an order could have been given orally and passed down through the network of political commissars. No contemporary captured Russian text of the speeches, no orders or propaganda leaflets citing excerpts of the speeches are to be found in the existing records of the War Crimes Bureau. The similarly incomplete files of the German Foreign Office indicate that in March 1942, the German 11th Army found a Russian brochure that was transmitted to the Foreign Office by its liaison officer, Werner Otto von Hentig. According to Hentig's transmittal note, the brochure contained the text of Stalin's report at the solemn meeting to celebrate the Russian Revolution held in Moscow on 6 November 1941, and also the text of Stalin's speech of 7 November 1941 at Red Square after the Red Army parade. Unfortunately, the brochure itself is missing from the files. You know, I wonder about what's missing from the German Foreign Office that the Allies didn't want anybody to look at. A passage from the speech of 6 November is quoted in a Foreign Office white book titled Bolshevist Crimes Against the Laws of War and Against Humanity. And it said, quote, henceforth our task and the task of the people of the Soviet Union, the troops, the commanders, the political commissars of the Red Army and the Red Navy is to kill every German to the last man. No mercy for the German intruders. Death to the German occupiers. Unquote. But this particular passage is not included in the edition of Stalin's speeches published in the Soviet Union in 1967. I wonder why. The volume does include the following slightly less virulent appeals. Quote, "Now we must achieve these goals. We must destroy the German war machine. We must annihilate the German occupiers to the last man," unquote. This is from 6th November. And the other one, the closing words from 7th November speech are, quote, "To the total destruction of the German invaders, death to the German occupiers." Obviously, such general appeals are subject to different interpretations. It cannot be said that they are equivalent to an order to kill German prisoners of war, even if broad interpretations led in practice to the slaughter of many thousands. It has been suggested that Stalin may have issued such an order on some other occasion, since various Soviet prisoners testified to the existence of secret orders to the commissars. But no such order or secret instruction can be established on the basis of the records of the War Crimes Bureau. Well, I think it's interesting that Stalin's words, he says, are not sufficient to say that he issued an order to kill German prisoners. But any kind of words of Hitler's are understood and said to be sufficient to claim that he ordered the extermination of millions of Jews and also ordered that Russian prisoners be killed. The next and the last section is headed German Interpretations. Even in the absence of absolute proof of the existence of a Stalin order to that effect, the unpublished internal remarks of the staff of the German Foreign Office show their genuine conviction that the Red Army was pursuing a policy of exterminating German POWs. This belief was based on the mosaic of captured Soviet documents, intercepted radio messages, and principally the statements made by Soviet prisoners of war. For example, the liaison officer of the German Foreign Office at the High Command of the Army observed in a transmittal note to the Foreign Office, quote, "Enclosed, please find several captured Russian papers which illustrate the method of the Russian military in dealing with German prisoners of war. They prove once again that it is customary for the Soviets to liquidate German prisoners of war immediately after interrogation," unquote. On 28 August 1941, the liaison officer at the operational command of the German Air Force reported to the Foreign Office, quote, "Soviet prisoners of war of the 40th Army Corps stated that all German officers taken prisoner were executed, since on the German side the Soviet political commissars were also shot," unquote. Referring to the same report on 15 September 1941, the Wehrmacht operations staff replied to an inquiry from the German Foreign Office. Quote, "It is evident that the Soviets from the very first day of the war and throughout the front have been murdering the Germans in brutal fashion." The allegation that on the German side, Soviet commissars who have been taken prisoner have been executed can only be understood as a belated pretext or excuse. Accordingly, there are no conclusions to be drawn. Unquote. The same general opinion can be read again and again in the internal notes and observations of the War Crimes Bureau. In November of 1941, the Bureau's report, titled War Crimes of the Russian Army, contained a selection of the cases collected and evaluated. In the preface, Johannes Golcha wrote, "The Soviet Union has, from the first day of the war, employed a terror policy, already characteristic of its brutal domestic practices, against defenseless German soldiers that have fallen into its hands and against members of the German Medical Corps. At the same time, apparently with the intention of masking its real conduct, it has made use of the following means of camouflage. In a Red Army order that bears the approval of the Council of the People's Commissars, dated 1st July 1941, the norms of international law are made public, which the Red Army, in the spirit of the Hague Regulations on Land Warfare, are supposed to follow. This, Russian order probably had very little distribution, and surely it has not been followed at all. Otherwise, the unspeakable crimes would not have occurred. End of report. The Bureau's second report on Soviet crimes, dated March 1942, evaluated several hundred additional depositions of Soviet prisoners of war and numerous captured Soviet papers. Bureau members, who of course knew of Hitler's criminal and controversial commissar order, consider what these commissars were doing and who they were, debated whether the widespread Soviet liquidation of German prisoners could be seen as a kind of reprisal for Hitler's order to deny prisoner of war status to Soviet political officers. Yet, in an internal paper, they expressed the view that the Soviet policy could not be interpreted as retaliation, quote, because the evidence presented unequivocally establishes that Soviet atrocities occurred in the same manner and at the same time in all the sections of the front and from the first day of combat, unquote. Further, in evaluating captured Soviet papers stipulating that German prisoners of war should not be executed or should no longer be executed, the Bureau noted that these documents, quote, do not manifest the least concern for treatment of German prisoners of war in a manner compatible with international law, but rather and exclusively they manifest the interest of staff headquarters to obtain intelligence information and their need to interrogate prisoners of war about enemy formation and other important military questions, unquote. These and other memoranda and correspondence with the operations staff in the Foreign Office clearly show the conviction of Bureau members that Stalin was personally responsible for the killing of German prisoners of war through either a general order or secret instructions to the political commissars. Whether their belief was correct cannot be conclusively determined, even today. But in any consideration of the question, certain remarks made by Stalin himself should not be dismissed out of hand. At the Tehran Conference in December 1943, according to Winston Churchill, quote, he said there were many toilers in the German divisions who fought under orders. When he asked German prisoners who came from the laboring classes why they fought for Hitler, they replied that they were carrying out orders. He shot such prisoners, unquote. This is what Winston Churchill said that Stalin had said, he shot prisoners who said that they were carrying out orders. Stalin made a similar remark to Milovan Gilas in April 1945, when Gilas protested the behavior of Red Army soldiers in occupied, what they called liberated, Yugoslavia. You have imagined the Red Army to be ideal, Stalin replied, and it is not ideal, nor can it be. Even if it did not contain a certain percentage of criminals, we opened up our penitentiaries and stuck everybody into the army. The Red Army is not ideal. The important thing is that it fights Germans, and it is fighting them well, while the rest does not matter, unquote. Thus, when the Red Army entered the Reich, in October 1944, it was the civilian population of East Prussia that had to endure the lack of discipline and lust for revenge of Soviet soldiers. When the German army temporarily took back the towns of Goldau, Wumbinnen, and Numersdorf, they discovered that hundreds of German civilians had been slaughtered and most of the women raped. As Alexander Solzhenitsyn, then a young captain in the Red Army, recalls, all of us knew very well that if the girls were German, they could be raped and then shot. This was almost a combat distinction. That is the end of chapter 16. I want to comment that you notice that Desaius calls Hitler criminal, calls Hitler's orders criminal, but he never calls Stalin's orders criminal. But he does say that we can't prove that Stalin made such an order. And yet, the evidence is everywhere and all over. I'm just saying that this is such a biased interpretation in this book, in spite of all the crimes that he is elaborating on here that there's proof for. he is still trying to make Hitler out to be the worst one of all. But then I guess he has to be careful. He's dealing with the United Nations, for whom he got paid for many, many years of his, and he's dealing with the media, who require this kind of attitude if a book is going to be published. So I have to say I'm grateful that we have the book, in spite of all the drawbacks that I point out. In the next installment, I think I will be able to read the next three chapters, which are all short, 17, 18, and 19. I want to thank you for listening to Captured German Soldiers in the Soviet Union, Chapter 16 from Alfred Desaias, Wehrmacht War Crimes Bureau, 1939 to 1945. This is Carolyn Yeager. Until next time.